The release last month of a Spanish-language version of the Star-Spangled Banner became a lightning rod for both sides of the immigration debate. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg points out that it's not the first time the anthem has been translated into another language. What's really different is the reaction to this version.
On May 8, 1905, the German-American community of New York commemorated the centenary of the death of the poet Friedrich Schiller. 25 brass bands and 6,000 marchers carrying torches and banners paraded up Fifth Avenue, after which more than 1,000 celebrants repaired to a Kommers, or beer party, where they sang the Star-Spangled Banner in German. As best I can tell from the press stories, nobody was offended by that rendition, nor did anybody discern a threat to American unity when the German version was sung at events at Baltimore, Sheboygan, or Indianapolis, or when other immigrants sang the anthem in Italian and Czech. In 1901, a former Spanish consul from Chicago personally presented President McKinley with a Spanish translation for use in the newly acquired dependencies of Puerto Rico and the Philippines. Immigrants were enthusiastic champions of the Star-Spangled Banner at a time when it was still vying with other songs to be named the nation's official anthem. The Germans disliked My Country, 'Tis of Thee, which was the other front-runner because its tune was lifted from God Save the Queen. And Catholic immigrants objected to the bit about the land of the Pilgrim's Pride, which they saw as an allusion to the country's Protestant roots. The German zest for singing the Star-Spangled Banner in their own language wasn't squelched until the First World War, when patriotic fervor led states to pass laws aimed at restricting the use of German. By 1917, nativist groups like the American Rights Committee were denouncing the performance of the anthem in the language of a nation with whom the U.S. was at war. But even then, people continued to sing the song in other languages. When an Italian version was performed at Carnegie Hall in 1919, the New York Times reported that it brought the audience to its feet. But a lot of modern Americans seemed less appreciative of the tribute when a Spanish-language version of the Star-Spangled Banner called Nuestro Himno was released last month. Some took the translation as a sign that immigrants were refusing to learn English. President Bush said, "I think people who want to be a citizen of this country ought to learn English, and they ought to learn to sing the national anthem in English." The conservative commentator Michelle Malkin asked indignantly, "Who is assimilating whom?" Even some supporters of the immigrant groups saw the song as a declaration of linguistic independence. The Chilean playwright Ariel Dorfman wrote defiantly that the song signaled that America is on its way to becoming a bilingual nation, which will soon be articulating its identity in two languages. What's the Spanish for poppycock? The fact is that the vast majority of Hispanics in America already speak English, and the rest are learning it much faster than the Germans, Italians, or those Norwegian bachelor farmers did a century ago. Back then, after all, the economic incentives for learning English were nowhere near as great as they are now. Most immigrants lived in isolated rural areas or urban ethnic enclaves, and a lot of cities had separate public school systems for immigrants, not like today's transitional bilingual programs, but schools where all the instruction was carried out in German or other languages. According to demographers, the average immigrant family in 1900 took more than three generations to make the complete transition to English dominance. Now, it takes just over two. By the third or fourth generation, in fact, most Hispanics are as depressingly monolingual in English as any other American group. But in the meantime, Americans are uneasy with the idea that you can serve two linguistic masters. And the anxiety is amplified by a consumer culture that makes multilingualism much more visible nationally than it used to be, even if foreign language speakers are actually a smaller proportion of the population than they were in Teddy Roosevelt's time. It isn't just all the media flaps surrounding the anthem. People feel a swell of indignation when they encounter other languages on billboards or ATMs, or as they're spinning their radio dials. Once you let these immigrants have their way on Burger King menus, how far could it be to ethnic separatism and civil war? Those were the specters that Senator Lamar Alexander evoked when he introduced a Senate resolution earlier this month that affirms that the anthem should be sung only in English. Jerusalem is diverse, he said. The Balkans are diverse. Iraq is diverse. Well, and so's my neighborhood of San Francisco, but we don't have any car bombs going off just yet. I wonder if Alexander would have been reassured by a recent L.A. Times article by Ann Powers that pointed out that the real anthem of the new immigrant movement isn't Nuestro Himno or Ricardo Arjona's haunting song Mojado or Wetback. It's Neil Diamond's gloriously hokey They're Coming to America, which the singer originally wrote as a tribute to his own immigrant grandparents. Latinos picked up on the song 20 years ago when Cheech Marin used it in his movie Born in East L.A., and it's been played at immigrants' rights rallies from Los Angeles to Kansas City to Milwaukee. Now, there's an image that Lou Dobbs could keep people up at nights with. Millions of brown-skinned illegals pouring over our borders, and they're singing Neil Diamond songs.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America. Every time that flag's unfurled, they come to America. Got a dream to take them there.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at the University of California at Berkeley. He's the author of a forthcoming book on language and politics called Talking Right. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. WHYY's engineering supervisor is Joyce Lieberman. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross. We'll close with a song from the original cast recording of Guys and Dolls. That show, as well as How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, Can Can, and Silk Stockings, were co-produced by Cy Feuer. He died yesterday at the age of 95.
I got the horse right here, the name is Paul Revere, and here's a guy that says if the weather's clear, can do, this guy says the horse can do, if he says the horse can do, can do.
I pick him Valentine, cause on the morning line, the guy has got him figured at 5 to 9.
But look at epitaph, he wins it by a half, according to this here and this telegraph.
For Paul Revere I'll fight, I hear his sports all right, of course it all depends if it rained last night.
I know it's Valentine.